Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and welcome to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Program on Health Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Join Dave and his guests now and every Tuesday at noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they share practice tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help get you through this day so you can live your caregiver life more fully and abundantly. Now, here's your caregiver host, Dave Nassani.
From Los Angeles, the Big LA, welcome to all my listeners out there in Radio Land. I am Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver, coming to you live globally through the famous Radio Star Worldwide Networks. Yes, folks, I am the guy. I'm going to help you. I'm going to guide you through this very difficult journey called caregiving. And we're going to do our very best to help you avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout. Now, we have an exciting show planned for you today. I just can't even wait. With my lovely co-host, Adrian Gruberg from the Caregiver Space, we'll be interviewing Marianne Amon, discussing ways to overcome stress, anxiety, and worry. They're all kind of ugly cousins to themselves, so stay tuned. You do not want to miss this show. And if you're new to the show, we get many new listeners every week, especially since we've gone video. I am your host, Dave Nassani, and this show is to caregivers of every single kind. And the one thing we know about caregivers is that they are caring and they're selfless. And they're sacrificial. Great words, huh? Mm-hmm. But that all makes them very prone to that terrible thing called burnout, because they tend to put everyone else's needs, you know, above their own. And just like the airlines tell us, in the event of an emergency, put your own oxygen mask on first before you help your loved one with their mask. And the airlines know this so well, because if you don't put your needs above your loved ones, then you will most likely black out, and then you won't be of any good to anybody with anything. We also talk about grief and loss here, because it's kind of related, another ugly cousin. And the devastating effects it can have on us. You know, that automatically throws us into this other thing called the grief process. Ouch. Unfortunately, folks, there is only one way out of the grief process, and that means you got to go through it. No shortcuts. Can't go around it, over it, under it. Got to go through it. Sorry. But hopefully we can help you through your grief and your loss. It's not going to take overnight. It's a process. But if you feel like you're stuck, we can help. Now, I want to thank last week's guest, Cheryl Hensel, author of 15 Essential Things You Should Know About Head Injuries. That was a great show. And as a reminder, you can hear that interview on our podcast at our website, which is caregivers with an S, and then caregiver without an S, caregiverscaregiver.com, because we're the caregiver's caregiver. And while you're there, take our short quiz to see if you're a candidate for burnout. Just for doing that, because I'm such a nice guy, I'm going to send you my first book absolutely free. What a deal. One arm, one leg, 100 words, overcoming unbelievable hardships. Because some of us caregivers have some unbelievable hardships to overcome. All right, enough of that. Marianne, welcome to the show, and thank you so much for agreeing to this interview.
Thank you. Thank you for having me.
Oh, our pleasure. And thank you, Adrian, for coming every week when you can to join us as co-host.
You're very welcome. It's my pleasure.
And Adrian's on the East Coast in New York, and we're on the West Coast in Arizona, right?
Yep.
In California. She wanted to come to California, but she ran out of gas when she got to Arizona, so that's where she decided.
Far as my car would take me, yep.
You know, I have a gas station at the end of this big hill called the Grapevine, and we get a lot of customers who just roll in on fumes because it's downhill.
Downhill.
And, you know, they're starting to panhandle to get a little further to the next stop, and that's, all right, I'm kidding, of course, about Marianne. Marianne, why don't you take a minute or two and introduce yourself. Just who is Marianne Amon? And other than me asking you to be on the show, why are you here?
Well, yes, you did ask me. No, I'm here. Well, First of all, my name is Marianne Amon, and I have a company called Create Your Magnificent Life Now. And I do an awful lot of things. I was a former prosecuting attorney, and I was a financial advisor and cash flow consultant, ministry leader, homeschooling mom. And I take a lot of, I know, right? I'm exhausted thinking about it. And I really take all of my past, my experiences, I roll them into my service now, which is really helping faith-based entrepreneurs create freedom, fulfillment, and fun. Got to have the fun, right, yes, Dave? Got to have the fun.
Yes.
through their magnificent lifestyle businesses. I'm all about lifestyle businesses, and what that is a business that helps you to basically have the freedom to work wherever you want to work. Now, I can work in Scottsdale versus New York. Cool. Yay. I get to work with whoever I want to work with. No bozos allowed. And and when I want to work. And this has been very helpful, especially because as you and I will talk about dealing with my husband's health issues and needing to be available. And I'm just thanking God that I have the kind of business that provides a steady income, even though I work at home and anywhere I want to. So I'm here because I'm all about dreams and dream activation and fulfilling the mission that's in your heart. You guys have missions that are in your heart. But I'm also know, having been a first-class worrier, that worry, stress, fears, all of that can interfere with the fulfillment of our dreams, can interfere with our mission, with what it is that we're here to do on earth. And so one of my specialties is really helping people to get over the worries, to find alternatives. And you and I will talk about this later, but I have a very inexpensive program called If I Don't Worry, What Do I Do Instead? And that's kind of what I'm featuring these days, because it's a program I did years ago, but now seeing with this new heightened experiences that we're having regarding health issues, it seemed like it just came out of the closet again and needs to be addressed once more. So anybody who wants to go on this worry-free journey with me, I would love to have come along.
A worry-free diet. I love that.
Yeah.
And, you know, Marianne, I know you because I know you. And I know that you're a woman of faith. I didn't know how to finish that sentence, so it's better to just move on. Now, we're both happily married to other people. It's nothing like that. Get your minds out of the gutter.
That's right.
But you are such a woman of faith, and I look up to you, and I admire you. And you know, so am I. Others have said that about me.
Yes.
But I think right now, in the seasons of our life, I'm kind of worrying about something, too, something that's never happened to me, which is when I talk it through, it's ridiculous because, you know, everything seems to work out. 90% of the things we worry about never come to pass. And, you know, I have no right to worry. God has been good to me. Mm-hmm. I, too, have a business that I don't deserve, that takes good care of me, that allows me to do, you know, what I'm passionate about. And he's basically the thing I'm worrying about is my body, because I've become 62 now. I'm going to be 63 in January. I mean, that sounds so old. If I knew I was going to live this long.
Don't say old. Don't say old.
What should I say instead of that word, Adrian?
Mature.
Mature. I like that word because I am mature.
What's your birthday in January?
January 13th.
Oh, okay, because I'm a January baby, too.
Get out of here. I knew there was something I liked about you. We're very similar. Some people who watch the astrological stars say, oh, well, that's why, because you were born in the same, you know, well, come on. We're similar because we're just similar. There's just so many different kinds of temperaments out there and personalities. And, you know, God handed out the gifts in a random manner because he knew that you'd be good with that and I'd be good with this and Adrian would be good with that. But my back, herniated disc, and
that's
I'm in
right.
pain a lot of time. I'm not used to pain. And they say they want to do surgery, and I don't want to do surgery. So, and you too. you're all of a sudden you're faced with, oh my gosh, am I going to lose my husband? I'm going to be, you know, the single wife. Can't be a single wife, but you know
the
what I mean.
The widowed wife.
That's what I meant to say. Yes.
Yeah.
So I'm here listening to you. I want to learn what I already know, and I found out a couple of nights ago in a seminar, when someone is telling you what you already know, instead of just saying, "Oh, I know that," and turn your mind off, you say, "You know what? Thanks for the reminder, because that's so important. I need to never forget that."
That's right. And reminding, because, you know, we go through life, and especially when you get into your 60s, there's a lot you know. There's a lot you've learned. I mean, really, what don't you know? You know, but there's a lot we forget. Yeah. And there's a lot of lessons that come along in life to remind us. And so, speaking of that, you know, I mean, I'm a mindset person. I'm always, I do believe in what you think about, you bring about. And to the extent where, I mean, I'm not just talking about little fleeting thoughts that come and go, but I'm talking about thoughts that tend to stay with you and maybe are underground. And worry is based a lot on that, on the subconscious mind. It's based a lot on oftentimes thoughts that we're not even aware we're having. There are sometimes thoughts that are so been there so long and we're so comfortable with them.
Yeah,
that,
comfortable.
We
invite the devil over to have coffee because he's such a nice guy, but he stabs you in the back every time.
Yeah, and you don't even know it's the devil. You don't even know.
He looks like an angel of light.
So one of the things that happened, well, tell your audience, my husband was diagnosed with a brain tumor August 20th. And this was a complete shock to us. And it happened, we don't know how it happened or where it happened exactly. But August 20th, he woke up in the morning and he said to me, "Will you read this passage from," it was a passage from the Psalms. I read it and he said, "Well, that's not what I read." And I'm like, "Well, what did you read?" And so I said, "You read it to me." So he reads it to me. And as he's reading, now, this is a man who he's a private investigator, FBI agent, very fluent in the English language, a pastor himself, licensed, ordained pastor, has his doctorate. So he starts to read, and it sounds like a third grader trying to translate a foreign language.
Oh,
and the words that he was choosing were not the right words. So he had had two pulmonary embolisms the month before, exactly a month before in July, and was on blood thinners. And so we thought that maybe this might be an internal bleeding issue. So I immediately jumped into the car, drove him to the ER. He had a CAT scan done. Time went by. Then he had an MRI done. And then they came back and said, "Well, we hate to say this, but there's something there that doesn't belong." We were like, "What does that mean?" and then the doctor brings us over to a computer screen and shows us what doesn't belong. And it's a nice sized tumor. And he is very uncomfortable telling us this. And I said to him, "Oh, I'm sorry, are you okay?" I'm telling the doctor that because he's so upset, you know? Well, my husband had the good mind to say, you know, "Well, where do we go for the best treatment?" And they said, "Well, St. Joseph's." Now we know why we're here in Scottsdale and not California, because they have one of the world-class premier brain trauma units at St. Joseph Hospital.
You didn't know that when you moved here.
No, we did not know that at all. And the thing that happened, though, to me at that moment was, you know, we're kind of like, brain tumor. And I said to my husband, "In a million years, would you have ever thought you'd have a brain tumor?" And he goes, "All the time." And I'm like, "What? What do you mean all the time?" He goes, "For 41 years, I have worried I'd have a brain tumor." Now, 41 years ago, he had his very first melanoma surgery, and a seed was planted then that, you know, sometimes melanomas can travel to the brain and to the lungs. So you need to be very, very careful. Well, 7 surgeries later, 7 melanomas later, 41 years later, he had been worrying all this time, wondering, when is it going to happen? When is it going to happen?
Reminds me of that verse in the book of Job, you know, after Job lost his family and his cattle and his sheep and, you know, just basically wiped everything out. And he said, you know, what I have feared has come upon me.
Exactly. Exactly. And you know what? The interesting thing about that is Job did everything right. He did everything right. My husband did everything right. He wore hats. He had long sleeve shirts. He slathered himself in sunscreen. He did everything right. And he still got the melanomas and he still got. So it gave us an opportunity after a while to really explore, you know, what's the connection here? What's really going on here? But before I get to that, and before we went down to this hospital, St. Joseph's, I started to go off into this dark and twisty place right there in the ER. And I noticed, and one of the things that came to mind was my first husband died of a brain tumor. So how do I marry 2 people that have brain tumors?
Yeah, they're going to think you're knocking them off or something.
Right. Yeah. Am I injecting something into the skull? I don't know. Right. I give them headaches. I don't know. But anyway, my husband, he had no sign whatsoever that there was. He had no vision problems until right before all of this. No headaches, nothing to give us any indication. Right. So I started going off into that dark and twisty place. And my husband saw me do that. He saw my eyes just shift off into that space, right? And he immediately, he looked over at me and he yelled out, "Stop!" Just like that. And it shook me. And all of a sudden I realized, and at that moment, I knew I had a choice. I could go into that dark and twisty space, or I could go the light and God place. You know, I could go the place of light and faith. And what do you think? You know, of course, in that moment, thank God I chose that. But I'm a mindset person, so I know this, you know, we're faith. Our faith needs to be at a place where when disaster comes, we've got something to fall back on, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Adrian, any thoughts? Have you ever had some worry and anxiety in your caregiving years?
Well, I knew I was going into, I knew what I was going to be in for, and I don't know how I knew, but it was like it was foretold, and I knew how I would do it and deal with it, because I'd been dealing with a hypochondriac for 30 years. So, you know, once the worst happens, you're sort of girded for it. And I had a very good attitude about it immediately. And I was very lucky that way.
That's awesome.
We don't want to, you know, be too overly simplistic saying that anytime somebody gets something, they brought it on by themselves. But you know, not necessarily. But I can almost guarantee you, if you are, you know, believing something is going to happen, it's more likely that something will happen to you than not, in my opinion. You all agree?
Yes and no. Lots of the things that Steve anticipated happening to him never happened. I mean, his father had his first heart attack at 41. So when Steve turned 41, that entire year, he was waiting to have a heart attack and did not, thank God. I know a lot of men that are like that. They've lost their fathers, or their fathers, you know, had a heart attack, and they expect the same thing to happen to them. I mean, Steve's father died at 65. Steve expected to die at 65. Those were the kinds of things that were implanted. And those 2 years were particularly difficult.
And they didn't have to be, is what you're saying.
No, they didn't have to be. But it's not uncommon at all.
Marianne?
Well, I think that I agree too, Adrienne, because my husband saw his father die early. But here's the thing. He made a conscious decision that that wasn't going to be him. All right? And when he did that, he did it through health, taking care by exercising, by mental attitude. So that didn't happen to him. I believe it's the things that are oftentimes not, they're hidden, the thoughts that are persistent and they're hidden and you don't address them. They kind of are underground. And one of the things that we're grateful for is the brain tumor brought it out into the open. It brought out the thinking process, the other lurking fears there into the open, because once they're in the open, now you can take a stand. Now you can form a plan of action. How am I going to approach this going forward? And without, it's like having superior intelligence when you're on a battlefield, you know? You see the lay of the land, you know what's up ahead, and even if you don't know what's ahead, like for example, today he has a biopsy scheduled for potential melanoma in a lymph node. And then he's got a colonoscopy for potential melanoma or colon cancer in his colon, all right? Now, before we even know the results of that, and his brain is all clear, by the way, hallelujah, brain is all clear, no spots, clean slate. But for the others, before we even know the results, because this is now exposed, we have the opportunity to say, how are we going to go forward with this, regardless of what the results are?
Right.
We don't have to wait for the results to determine how we're going to move forward. So we're going to move forward in faith. We're going to move forward proactively. We're going to move forward in love, knowing that we have a good God, that whatever the outcome is, he loves us, he's with us, he's going to take care of us. And we also are moving forward in that we still have dreams. These are not going to stop our dreams. And I think that's what happens with crises and with health issues. They can stop your dreams dead in their tracks rather than turn it around into something triumphant, right?
Absolutely. Good analogy. You know, Adrienne, what type of things do caregivers typically worry about and get anxious about?
Well, they worry about loss.
The what?
A little louder. Your volume is low.
Is low?
No. Are you close enough to your microphone? Ed, can you increase her?
Am I all right now? Wasn't low before?
Oh, that's good.
No. It's good now. It wasn't before, though.
Okay. I don't have my headset with me. I should bring that. I didn't expect to be here today. They worry about impending loss, impending doom. Are they doing everything they can? How it's affecting their life, their children? There are so many different scenarios. They worry about money. They worry about the mortgage. You know, they have everything to worry about, but instead of like writing a list of what's happening for real, you know, they just let it stew, and that really it just consumes them, and they live in fear,
right?
And they don't live proactively.
So what do you suggest for that, Marianne? You got a pill in your purse for that?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Well, you know, and that happened to me too. One of the things prior to the brain tumor was me feeling like as I was watching my husband and he was faltering in a variety of ways, and he wasn't bringing in the income that he'd used to. And while my business was doing well, it was never intended to be the primary source of, and the sole source of income. Right? I was going to be the one where all the money was going to...
We lost Marianne.
We lost her. Tell you what, you want to go to a break now and I can try to get her back?
Yeah, good idea. Let's go to a break.
All right.
Being a caregiver takes a special person with passion and compassion. But even you can become a little burned out from time to time. The Caregiver's Caregiver Radio Show was developed to help you overcome obstacles, adversity, and burnout, as well as just having a place to rest, relax, and recharge your batteries. We've all been there, and you're not alone. Now, you can take the Caregiver's Caregiver with you. Get the top 25 radio shows in convenient form that plugs right into your USB car stereo or computer. Learn the techniques, tips, and encouragement we all need to better handle the day-to-day challenges. For around $1 per show, just $29.77, get the credit card-sized USB card to have with you anytime you need a caregiver's pick-me-up. Just go to DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com and order yours today. Go to DaveTheCaregiver'sCaregiver.com now. Consider it an investment in you, and ultimately, an investment in them. Caregivers, have you ever felt like nothing is going right? Well, cheer up and tune in to Dave, the Caregiver's Caregiver radio program on Radio Star Worldwide, where you'll learn how to avoid that dreaded thing called caregiver burnout and how to survive the grieving process. With roughly 100 million caregivers in the U.S. and Canada alone, it's about one-third of the population. That means everybody probably knows somebody caring for a loved one. They say that there are only three types of people in the world: those who are caregivers, those who will become caregivers, and those who will someday need a caregiver. Mothers of special needs children, family members caring for elderly parents, spouses, siblings, or friends caring for disabilities such as Alzheimer's, dementia, cancer, stroke, heart disease, diabetes, muscular dystrophy, AIDS, autoimmune diseases, the list goes on. Join Dave and his guests every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific on Radio Star Worldwide as they discuss avoiding caregiver burnout and surviving grief. You'll start feeling better in no time as you begin to receive practical tips and tools that you can start using immediately to help you get through the day and to live life more fully and abundantly.
And we're back with Marianne Amon and Adrian Gruberg. And Marianne, what were we discussing when you were so rudely cut off from the internet?
Well, you had asked me, you know, what do I have to say to people that have this, worry going on, impending? I think Adrian had mentioned some impending loss and doom. Are they doing everything they can? A lot of money concerns, you know, can I pay the bills? What's going to happen afterwards? And bills are especially mounting during this time. You know, and what effect is it going to have on the children? I mean, the list is endless. And what I was saying is that I started to go through a lot of these myself. I actually thought I had conquered worry a while ago, but this brought up a whole nother set of worrisome thoughts. And so before I tell you that what I think you should do, one of the things you have to realize is that worry is not a feeling. Worry is an activity. It's an activity of the mind. It is your mind having imagination and thoughts about either what you don't want to happen, or what ifs, or how is that going to happen, or what should I do? It's mostly a lot of questions that don't get answered. And that produces feelings. Anxiety is the feeling. It produces confusion. It produces a sense of discouragement, hopelessness, dismay, depression. Those are all the feelings that are produced by the thoughts. So worry is an activity of the mind. It's really meditating on things that you don't want to happen or things you think you can't control. Whereas meditation normally is about thinking, meditating on truth, meditating on positive thoughts, meditating on what's good and right, you know?
So are you kind of saying that, I'm sorry for interrupting, are you kind of saying that worry is meditating on bad stuff and faith is meditating on good stuff? Is that too simplistic?
It's simplistic, but I think it says it well. I do, you know? And I think if we can kind of put it in... we can put it in simple terms, the better we are.
Adrian, you look like you might want to say something, or am I wrong?
No, I'm listening.
Okay. That's her listening face.
So how do you stop it is the question, because once it's engaged, you're really, you've got embedded pathways, neural pathways in your brain that are like ruts in the road, and you don't even have to think about it. It's just that train gets in those ruts and goes down the path, and that's all there is to it. It becomes a runaway train, you know? Honestly,
yeah, great analogy.
I like to think about it in terms of, you remember the Oregon Trail and how often that trail was traveled, and it developed these ruts in the road, so people get stuck after a while. And there was almost like there was no way to go on a different path unless you created new ones. Yeah. All right. So there is, in a way, some concerted effort has to be made. Now, a lot of people are very invested in worry. They think worry is doing something. They think worry is a badge of honor. They think that it's something that is good. You know, like, this shows how much I care.
But it feels when really, good to worry for some people, doesn't it?
Some people it does. It really feels like I'm showing you how much I love and how much I care. How can I not worry? That would be irresponsible. That would be careless. That would be uncaring. Right?
Yeah.
So we don't like giving up worry because we think in some ways that it produces something positive, but that's a lie.
So we have to replace worry with something else.
Exactly.
Like you said, if I don't worry, what will I do now?
Exactly. So the number one thing that happened, so I was going down this road again. So for 2 or 3 days, I was going down this road. I was worrying about my husband. I was worrying about the money. I was feeling resentful, but I didn't know it all. You know, all I knew was now I'm exploding. And I'm like exploding all over everybody. And fortunately, they know me well enough that they didn't get all like upset. They let me have it, you know, go my way and so forth. And trusting that I was going to figure my way out of this somehow. But I couldn't figure my way out of it. It was gone too far. So thank God for God, because I had a 4 a.m. wake-up call. 4 a.m. wake-up call. And this is what I heard God saying. Get back to love. Get back to love. Love never fails. Now, at the moment, I'm thinking, okay, how do I do that? What does that even mean right now? You know, I got out of bed. And I started journaling and asking him questions like, okay, get back to love. Then you're going to have to do that for me, because right now I feel kind of powerless in that. I don't quite know what I'm supposed to think, how that's supposed to feel. I'm so disconnected right now from that because I'm in a swill of worry. And so what came to mind was the past, all the ways that God had been there for me, all the miracles, all starting from when I was born. I was born when I had a disease and I was supposed to die. And there was a miracle there. So my life flashed right before me. And I took inventory of all the ways that God had been good to me, had resurrected me, had restored me, had provided for me, right down to my children, you know? And as that was happening, well, without working at it, Love started swelling up. I started to get into this place of feeling like he is with me. This is all going to be okay. We're going to figure this out. But one of the things that got revealed during this time was my resentment. And I had to do something with my resentment and the feeling of abandonment. I mean, there's a lot of caregivers, I think, feel abandoned. They feel so alone, you know? And that's what I was feeling, alone. And so I had to reaffirm that God was with me. I'm not alone. And I released resentment and allowed love to flow in. That was August 30th. All right? August 30th, 10 days after we discovered the brain tumor. So the first thing I have to say is feel the love. Whatever you do, whatever works for you, maybe if you don't know how to do that, then pray. Ask God to show you, how do I feel the love? But return to that place of love, because love doesn't fail. And the second thing is, really, if you have any resentment, get rid of it, clear it. Because resentment is taking up the room where love belongs. It's taking up the room where positive energy should be, because that's what you need during this time, right?
Yeah.
This is what
and
you need.
What causes resentment? I always thought that when somebody is offending you, maybe there's different kinds of resentment. When somebody's offending you and you don't say anything about it, you just, and then it builds. So you're telling the other person by your inaction that what you're doing is okay, because I'm okay with it, because I'm not, you know, defining my boundary. I'm not complaining. So after a while, when you're quiet long enough, this is where resentment comes from. Then you start resenting that person and you start, you know, like thinking about that person in negative ways. So is that the same kind of resentment or different kinds of resentment, or is it all the same?
No, I think that's a part of resentment. Definitely. Definitely. I think you can tell you're resentful, though, because a lot of times you don't know you're resentful, by saying things like, why me? You know, that's a big clue when you're saying, why me? How come I have to be going through? This isn't how it's supposed to be. I didn't bargain for this, you know, I didn't buy onto this. Where are you, God? You know, how come I got to do this all alone? You know, all those thoughts, you can tell that you're in resentment when you're starting to ask those questions, for which nobody can answer, you know, because if they tried, you'd probably punch them, you know?
And it also in the olden days, they called it, woe is me.
Woe is me.
You know, under the category of self-pity.
Yes.
A pity party.
Pity party. Yeah, but, absolutely. You know, I'm here. Nobody cares. I'm all in this alone. And you start to hear it in little subtle ways in your conversations with people. But mostly we're not aware.
Why does self-pity feel so good? And so comfortable? It's like, you know, while we're eating that gallon of ice cream, oh, woe is me, you know.
Well, and feeling too, physical feeling, you know, here's another way to tell is that you can start to feel this feeling starting at the top of your throat, and it just kind of like goes down the front of you, you know, there's this, and I was feeling like my heart hurt and my insides were caving in. You know, it's actually has some very physical manifestations to it, you know, when it goes long enough. And then it goes into stress in your body, doesn't it? It goes into more health issues. So your question is, why do we want that? Because I don't think we know of another way to do it. Somehow we feel entitled to that feeling. But yeah. Again, Dave, it's another lie that that's a good thing. It's not a good thing.
Do you recommend we spend some time in self-pity, because that's the only way to get out of it, because it takes us to a place that we definitely don't want to be. And we say, well, how did I get here? You know, or is there a way to completely bypass self-pity?
Well, I don't know. You ever see the movie Network News, where Holly Hunter she's the producer in the show. Do you remember that, Adrian? Right. And every day she has to have like a set, she times herself 10 minutes, I think, of crying for like, because you got to get that out of the way, that, you know, just the drama and, oh gosh. And now that she did that, now she's ready to go. All right. I tell you that I write to God. I have to get it out. I don't like to pretend I'm not feeling something, or, you know, so if I'm feeling anxious, if I'm upset, and I didn't know to do that with this. Honestly, this really exposed all of that. So I talked to God. I'm like David in the Bible, like, what the heck? A blah, blah, blah. And why this and why that? You know, and I will like write this angry venting letter. And then I'll say to God, okay, now what do you want to say to me?
That's a big part of what the caregiver space is about. I believe in writing. And I believe that writing it out, venting, letting out your anger and resentment. Once you recognize what it is, just get it out of you. And then you can deal with the actual issues. And
that's right.
Things. I'm not saying that things aren't real. They're definitely real things that you worry about. You just don't think about the solutions. It becomes something that just goes around and around and around, and you don't deal with it.
That's right. Yeah, and it gets it out of your head, out of your heart, onto the paper.
right?
And I'm totally, I totally agree, Adrienne. That is, that's one of the most helpful things for me personally and staying clear.
You journal, don't you, Adrienne?
Oh, yes. It's on my website.
Yeah. I used to journal in my own notebook, and I had like years and years of journaling, and I went to Hawaii for a vacation. Of course, I took my notebook because, you know, that isn't a time to stop journaling. And I must have left it at the hotel, and it got lost. And I said, oh, my God, 10 years of journaling just gone. And I got so discouraged, I stopped journaling. And then I started again on the computer this time. You can just easy to save a file and save it everywhere. But I need to get back into that. Remind me why I need to do that.
I mean, I find journaling, whether I give myself a topic to write about or I just talk about what I did during the day, and it's simply a diary. The diary pages are okay, but every now and then I'll start to expound upon something like, why is this important? Why am I even writing about this? And all of a sudden that'll become obvious, and it'll be pages of why it's important and why it's affecting me. And I don't want it to affect me this way. And I'll work it out on the page.
Yeah. I can't believe how fast this hour is going. We need to take another break. I hope you're all having as much fun as I am. But we'll be right back. Don't go away.
One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is a touching story about Charlene, a stroke survivor. Back in 1996, Charlene was a healthy, normal, very active 52-year-old woman whose amazing talents resembled that of both a Martha Stewart and Wonder Woman. But all that changed when she suffered a massive stroke that left her severely speech impaired and paralyzed on her right side. She met her husband, Dave, 21 years earlier. They had a wonderful, fairy tale, storybook-like courtship that soon culminated in their marriage. Charlene had just come out of a marriage where after 10 years, she received two black eyes and a broken nose by her former husband when he came home high on speed. Charlene believed in no second chances of any kind for abuse, so she left, finding herself all alone in the world with her 5 and 10-year-old daughters, Cynthia Lorraine and Deborah Lynn. She started raising them by herself for the next 2 years. Then fate brought them all together. After falling in love with Charlene, Cindy, and Debbie, their love then produced Rebecca. They all had a wonderful, normal life for the next 20 years. But today, things are very different for everyone. One arm, one leg, 100 words. Overcoming unbelievable hardships is the amazing story of a woman's fight to survive all that life had thrown her way. Everyone who knows Charlene is thoroughly amazed at how she lives day by day, month by month, year by year, and with a smile on her face and hope in her heart that everything is going to be okay. Her faith in God is her foundation in this hope that everything happens for a reason and what doesn't kill her will make her stronger. She inspires everyone that meets her. Best-selling author Lynn Barrington says, "If you think you have it bad, read this book. This is a beautiful, genuine story from the heart. It is inspiring and easy to read. When you finish this book, you'll be able to look at your concerns in a new light." 9-time Grammy and Dove Award recipient, the godfather of contemporary gospel music, Andre Crouch, says, "Charlene just won't let the promises of God go, and she has not let her circumstances get in the way of her faith. She's not just a survivor, she's more than a conqueror. As the Bible states, you will be encouraged by her testimony, regardless of what you're going through." Order your copy today from the author's website, onearmoneleg100words.com. And Dave and Charlene will personally autograph your copy. Enjoy.
And we're back with Adrienne Gruberg. Where am I? What city am I in? And Marianne Amon. Okay. So let me, can you all hear me?
Yes.
Yes. Okay. I didn't know if I had that mute moment going on. Let me read you something I pulled up on a website that talks about worry. "You've been in bed for an hour, tossing and turning, but you can't sleep. You keep rehashing the day's events and worrying over everything that needs to get done tomorrow. Now you start your fretting about the fact that you can't get to sleep." Has anyone ever been there as a caregiver?
Yeah.
I only can't sleep on the important nights that I have to get up early. What is that all about?
Of course.
But you're right, Marianne. Something is in our subconscious that we aren't even aware that it's there because we brushed it off during the day. But a seed has been planted, and now the seed is growing as we sleep and saying, well, what about this? Well, what if this doesn't happen? Well, what if you're going to be in a wheelchair the rest of your life? You know, just wreaking havoc while we're sleeping so we can't defend ourselves. And then we wake up in a cold sweat.
Well, it does. It comes out in the middle of the night oftentimes, doesn't it? It's like snipers in the night.
Especially financial worry, you know.
Yes.
Or an investor. You just made an investment. Adrian, you're so low. We got to get you higher volume.
I can't help it.
Okay.
Go ahead. Ed,
why can't you make her louder, Ed? Okay, that's good.
I think that there are very real things that we start to think about while we're going to sleep. They're not necessarily things that aren't going to happen. They may very well be things that are going to happen, and we just start worrying, and they get out of proportion and become so huge. Instead of our dealing with them, they're keeping us up. So, of course, there are techniques to go past that, but I didn't want to go into that yet.
Well, there's a lot of people that say you should prepare for sleep. You shouldn't listen to the news because there's only bad news on the thing. You shouldn't, like, go over your taxes or your budget before you go to sleep. You know, try to think on good things and lovely things and positive things. Right, Marianne?
Well, yeah, and I think, like, I think where Adrian is going to is that we need a strategy. That's the thing. If this is something that happens pretty frequently for you, you need a strategy. What is it that you're going to do to, because you're not helpless. I think that's the thing we need to know. We aren't helpless. We aren't powerless. And that's where worry really stems from ultimately, is the subconscious belief that we're not enough, that we don't have enough resources, that we're not smart enough, that we're not clever enough, that we're not strong enough. There's somehow or another, we're not enough. And when when we have to first address that issue, you know, is that really true? Life
Can
happens.
Can I interrupt one moment?
Sure.
Don't lose that thought. But, you know, I've always been taught don't lose this. I've always been taught. All right, keep going. I'll be back.
Never mind.
Dave will be back.
Well, I think the bottom line is that if this has got to be something that you have to make a decision that you're going to be done with worries. You know, you have to make a decision that, yes, life goes on. Life has circumstances. Bad things happen. All of that are real. But you have to make a decision that you want to do it differently, that you want to think differently, you want to approach it differently. And that's going to take some concerted effort. Without some concerted effort and a decision to do it differently, you'll just keep doing it the same old way, you know, and you'll still continue to have the sleepless nights. You'll continue to, you know, spin in circles or be paralyzed or whatever you end up doing as a result. You have to know that it can change. You're not powerless to worry.
But yeah, I remembered what I have to say, and I have to say it before I forget it again. I was always taught that our subconscious is kind of stupid. You know, it's trapped in there. It can't see and it can't hear. You know, it only knows what we tell it. Mm-hmm. So if we tell it, man, I'm going to be president of the United States, it'll say, oh, really? Okay, well, we'll get right on it. You know, or if we're going to, you know, I'm going to get a brain tumor. Oh, well, I think I could do that. Okay, give me it might take a couple of years, but, you know, that's what I've always been told about the subconscious. It can be your best friend or it can be your worst enemy. Yes?
True. That's true.
Are we unanimous, Adrian, or you have a different opinion?
No, we're unanimous. I just wanted to say something before I forgot it.
Okay.
Many of these things, even though we're not powerless, many of these things are outside our control.
That's for sure.
And we have to learn to deal with those too.
That's right.
And that's, for many people, the hardest thing.
I, It's really, what is your perspective going to be about those things that are out of your control? That's what we get to choose.
And that's important. And you know, we shouldn't just throw our arms up. So that's why these interviews are so important. I wish more people would listen to them. You know, I look at my posts on Facebook and I get lots of posts on lots of different things I post, lots of likes and interactions. But I notice on the shows, and we have a huge audience, but on my Facebook page, you know, it's just a tiny percentage of people. They're coming from different places who listen. But I'm wondering why does my Facebook audience not take, you know, these shows more seriously? If they just you know, watch one a week, and I've got, you know, a library of 100 of them, they can, you know, eventually we're going to talk about the topic that you're struggling with, you know, and being in the right place at the right time. But, you know, that's the whole thing about caregivers. You know, we're killing ourselves to help them to do things, to avoid burnout, survive grief and all of that. And, you know, Adrian and I talk about this all the time. And did we ever agree on an answer as to why they do this, Adrian, or why they don't do this? You can lead a horse to water, but you can't make him drink.
They will say it's because they don't have the time. Most of the time. Yeah. I was silencing myself because Shotzi's barking like crazy. But because there's somebody on the deck. But I think they would say it's because they don't have the time.
Yeah. Okay, you can mute now.
Mute.
I think sometimes people, and no offense here, but sometimes people really just like venting. They like having a place to vent. I have found that there are not that many people who really want to go through whatever effort it is to make the change. Partly they don't understand they can make the change. Partly they don't understand that it can be done more simply than they imagine it to be. Sometimes making the shift seems like hopeless, like they're in this pattern and that's all they can do about it. They're already feeling a bit like a victim that they're in this position, you know? I mean, I know that for the times that I start off like really strong in my caregiving, whether it was my mom or my husband or my children, you start off strong feeling, but after a while you start to get really worn down. And rather than seeking help about it, you often just continue letting it go because you don't think you should need extra help. You don't think that you don't feel like you have the money to get the extra help. There's all kinds of obstacles in the way of getting the help, you know? So instead, what people will do is they'll gather in, it's misery loves company, you know, and makes them feel better just to know that there's other people out there that are feeling the same way they do.
That's right.
And there are so many people out there who feel that they're the only ones that can deal with the problem. And in so many cases, the people that they're caring for refuse help from anyone else.
Yes.
So it instead of the caregiver actually putting their foot down and saying, okay, for an hour a week, I'm going to do this. Or, where so-and-so is coming in every day for an hour and I'm going to go out for that hour. They won't entertain it.
Yeah.
And really they have to force themselves to be selfish. You know, I did that with my wife. You know, she didn't really want me doing a radio show and she didn't really want me, you know, going to all these seminars and learning how to do things better. And, you know, she wanted me home with her, you know, a little possessive and selfish of her. But, you know, she earned the right to be selfish because, you know, the world kind of revolves around her. She can't talk. She can't, you know, walk very well. So I get that. But she needs to also get that I need to be selfish for a moment because in order to tell your wife that when she's saying, no, no, no. And I said, listen, you know, this is a mountain I'm going to die on. Okay. I let you win a lot of arguments, but this one I'm going to win, you know, like it or not like it. You can like it with a smile or cry, you know, but, you know, and you gotta be that strong. You gotta be that passionate. You gotta be that motivated. I used to always tell my daughter when she was little, when I wanted her to do something and she didn't want to do it, I said, just pretend I'm going to give you $1 million for doing it. He says, really? You know, all of a sudden we're motivated, you know, and to say that caregivers, I just scratched myself. I'm bleeding all over myself. Old scab. There's an analogy in that too, right? Don't we always scratch the old scabs off? But, you know, caregivers always use that excuse, and I'm going to be bold enough to call it an excuse, and some people will get mad at me. But, you know, we have time to do what we want to do. Mm-hmm. You know, sometimes I don't want to get out of bed, and then I will remember, this was many years ago, then I will remember, oh, wait a minute, I'm going skiing this morning. And all of a sudden, at 5 a.m., many times I don't remember why I set the alarm to wake up at 5 a.m. Oh, my God, what am I doing this morning, you know? And but to remember, oh, no, I have to be on the slopes at 7. I got to get up now, and you should see me jump out of bed. Now, what just happened in my mind to make me go, oh, I'm not going anywhere today, too? Boom. You know, it's called motivation. And we just have to find the right motivation. And it's about priorities, you know. Even at work, I'm in the middle of a construction project at the gas station. And I'm a little overwhelmed because it's like, oh, my God, you know, the place is a mess. And what should I do first? Should I count the money? Should I go to the bank? Should I clean up this mess so I don't trip over and kill myself? I mean, you know, it's just like that's how our brains are. What should I do first? What's I got to prioritize, okay, because I got way too many things. They're not all going to get done today. They're not all going to get done in the next hour, but there's one thing that I should do, and I got to figure out what it is. How do we prioritize? How do we figure out what's important enough to be number one, number two, number three, and so on? With caregivers, I think self-care should always be number one. Am I wrong, Adrian?
No, but a lot of caregivers don't want to hear about self-care. It's all they ever hear is the first thing is to take care of yourself, and they don't think they have time to do it. They don't realize that self-care works on a lot of different levels. No, there's not an hour to go to the gym every single day. You know, that's not what it's about.
And they can get resentful about that.
Yeah, right. And then they come back when they are in an emergency situation, yeah, gasping for breath, going down for the third time, and they want us to help us. Their phone is flashing, you know, 1%. And what do I do? You know, well, I told you what to do a month ago, you know, you didn't do it.
The phone is flashing. I'm getting notices that you have to, that the show.
Oh. Okay. Thank you, Adrian, for watching over my
not
shoulder.
Not just me, it's Marianne too. She's going like this.
Oh, I wondered what you were trying to say. Okay.
I should have just come out and say it. They have to end the show now, Dave.
Yeah, Ed could do that. So I'm glad you're not suicidal, both of you. So, you know, the hour has gone so fast. Adrian, you first, and then Marianne, tell us how we can get a hold of you if we want to hear more of what you do and say and so on.
So Adrian, A-D-R-I-E-N-N-E, at thecaregiverspace.org.
Nice. And you, Marianne.
Yes, and also, too, I just want everybody to check out If I Don't Worry, What Do I Do Instead? And you can find that program. It's a 6-week online program for at MaryAnnAmon.com/done-with-worry. It's for people who are done with worry. MaryAnnAmon.com/done-with-worry.
Awesome.
Thank you
guys for coming on the show. And I just want to remind everyone, I don't know if Ed ended the show or not, but I can edit this last part on his, because it's already going to be on the YouTube. So if just want to remind everybody that we're here every Tuesday at noon. What time is it? Pacific time. So thanks for coming in, and remember to go to that website and ask for that free gift by seeing if you're a candidate for burnout, caregivers, caregiver.com. Good night, and have a great time. Until we'll see you next
week. Thank you.
Thanks, Ed.
Thank you for listening to the Caregivers Caregiver Radio Program with Dave Nassani. Join Dave every Tuesday at 12 noon Pacific. Or catch the program anytime, 24/7, right here on Radio Star Worldwide.